to another episode of Afternoon Tea. Today I've got a really lovely long interview for you with a lady called Leah, who is absolutely brilliant. Leah moved to France during the pandemic last year in around August, I believe, and she's currently working on an app that's designed for mental health. She's also running an amazing Instagram account with lots of body positivity. I really hope you enjoy this episode and I hope you enjoy hearing what she has to say. She's got a really magical way of looking at the world and also just a really beautiful voice to listen to. So the one thing I think it's really important to mention is that in this episode, Leah and I will be speaking a little bit about eating disorders and body dysmorphia. None of this goes into any depth, and it's mainly from a societal perspective as opposed to an individual personal reflection. However, I just want to put out a trigger warning that if this is an upsetting topic for you or you aren't ready to handle an issue like this, please, please tune out and look after yourself, because the last thing that I want is for anybody to find the topic's distressing or uncomfortable. Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, that's all good. Thank you so much for being here.
Not at all. Thank you for making time.
No worries. Would you just like to tell me a bit about yourself?
Well, I moved out to France when my A-levels got cancelled back in March. So I'm currently here working on a variety of different projects. Just seeing what happens. I think with COVID and all the restrictions, university definitely wasn't something that I was looking to do right now. So I'm just going to take my time, see what happens, see how the world unfolds with everything that's going on. Try not to have too much of a plan.
Amazing.
But there you go.
That sounds really good. So where are you originally from? Like, where did you grow up?
Well, I'm actually, after doing my little bit of research on you, I was born in Surrey. I was born in Surrey and have lived there pretty much my whole life. I went to a boarding school before I moved out here, and now I'm in France. I'm just actually on the border with Geneva in Switzerland. And have been here since beginning of August, so it's been over 6 months now, which is quite scary to think.
Goodness, that's amazing. That sounds so nice. So what are you doing at the moment to keep yourself occupied?
Good question. All sorts. At the moment, I am working with an NGO who are focusing on empowering women through sport, which is really, really interesting. And then I'm also, at the moment, I'm creating an app, which is very exciting, called Checkmates. And it's in its early stages, but it's an app focusing on mental health and actually almost like using a dating app kind of algorithm, but for people to be able to meet other people who have been through a similar situation to them. Focusing on mental health, and I think especially with the COVID restrictions, meeting new people right now is almost impossible.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's bringing all of that online, which is very exciting.
That's amazing. That sounds so positive. I've never heard of anything like that, like a dating app for mental health.
is definitely the right thing.
What inspired you to set it up?
Well, back in 2016 now, my mum was actually diagnosed with breast cancer. And going through it, it was quite an isolating process, I think, especially being a young carer. It was really hard to meet other people who had gone through that too. And I think the support that my mum got was fantastic, and both through charities and also with the hospital. The mental health side of things as well was covered, and she got fantastic treatment. But as a carer, it was really hard to find anything to help me, really. And especially being under 18, again, it was just like nigh on impossible to find that kind of thing. So that's where it started, and it's been a long process of kind of working out where I wanted to go with things. And it's a shame, because with those kind of things you have to be careful with working with children, so it's something that I've had to pitch to a slightly older audience, but I think the morals and the idea still stands.
Sounds really, really empowering and like really exciting as well, because as you say, like, that's something that unless you've been in that situation, I don't think you really think of. No,
and I think I have so many lovely family, so many lovely friends, sorry, and my family are also amazing, but there's certain things, and I think the idea of the app is to be for everyone, whatever sort of difficult situations you've been through in your life, but to have someone that just really understands it, has been through it, knows the technical terms and what's to come as well, is I think sometimes can be really helpful.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So when is your app sent to launch, or have you not got that sorted yet?
Yeah, again, good question. That at the moment I'm working with kind of building my team, because I am not an app developer or designer. So I have all the ideas and they're just kind of flowing through, but I'm trying to, at the moment I'm building a team to kind of put that into action. So my hope is that the app launch will be by the end of this year, but there's various different kind of routes of the app that should be coming out sooner, but no, I don't have a date yet, unfortunately.
Oh cool, that sounds really soon though, given that you've, I mean, how long have you been working on this then? Has it been like since you first like realized that you needed a support network outside of family and friends, or like is this just been a recent project?
I think, I mean, since I realized that this was a kind of gap in the market, such a cliche word, but I think it's necessary. And ever since I realized that, it's been something that's kind of been ticking away. And I, at the time, I tried to work with my school to see if we could do this via kind of paper or emails or have some kind of online platform. But my school time got cut short. And so I never actually got to kind of complete the project. But it's really been in the last year, I guess, I, like a lot of other people, have had a lot more free time on my hands, which has been fantastic. And I can't sit still. So I was always doing something. And so, yeah, it's really been the last year that things have been able to solidify, and I've kind of got my path a bit clearer, which is a good feeling.
That's amazing. So do you know what you want to do like beyond this, or at the moment are you just sort of taking every day as it comes? You mean, it sounds like you're someone who definitely like lives in the moment, which is so good.
I think this whole experience of COVID and a lockdown, that has been my biggest lesson. It's like, just accept things as they come, take every opportunity when it arises, and don't plan too much. And I think I'm very fortunate and have been very lucky to be able to just kind of roll with what's going on. And for me, it's all come at a time in my life where actually I am flexible, I can do lots of different things and see what happens. And so yeah, plans are limited, but I think that makes it even more exciting, because I could just see what happens, see where it goes. I'm quite good at always having stuff to fall back on, so we'll see.
That's really good. Oh, I'm glad to hear that you have that mindset, and I think it is definitely one that's like rarer and rarer until, I guess, like the pandemic, where everyone sort of had the opportunity to like sort of reevaluate like the way they looked at life. I know that Oh, do you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say that when I said that I didn't want to go to university, it was like, oh my goodness, are you mad? Like, what's wrong? And I think that has been something that I've had to fight a little bit, is that like, oh, so when are you going to university? When are you, you know, when will you come back to that? And I've actually just cancelled my second year of deferral, that makes sense. Which was a big decision. Another 18 months of kind of having to trust myself in the process is feels like a long time right now, but again, right now university just doesn't sit right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's really good that you like trust yourself and you trust your intuition to know what's right for you, because I think it's so easy to just, especially during COVID, and you know, with the economy at the moment, so many people I know have just said, oh, you know what, like, I think I'm just going to go to uni for something to do. So that's really, really, like, empowering that you know yourself that well. I'm intrigued. Have you always been like that? Have you always, like, really had a strong sense of self? Or is it something you've developed over the years?
I think people would say that I've always had a kind of underlying confidence. I think when I was a child, I did voiceovers. And which is a very sort of secret part of my life, but when I was, it started when I was about six. And I think for me, that was really where my confidence grew, because as a six-year-old, I was pushed into this. I was pushed into work and the industry, and I was always constantly surrounded by adults. And for me, I really do think that I hold that as the kind of start of my confidence and where things were going. But in terms of confidence in sort of my job and my studies and things, I think that's come much later. I don't know if I can pinpoint it to a certain thing, but I think it's always kind of been there. I've just had to push.
Of course. That's really interesting. I've never met anyone who's done like voiceover work. So, I mean, I'll keep that a secret for you. We won't go into it, but that is really interesting. So I know that you've spoken a little bit about your interest in sort of like self-growth, and I guess mental health is a big thing for you as well. So I'm really interested in your views as a young person on like social media and even just your childhood and like what it's been like growing up. I guess, how old are you?
I'm 19. Yeah.
So like 2000s baby, like what it's been like for you to develop those things while growing up around like social media and MTV and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm one of five. I'm actually bang in the middle of five kids, and I have an older brother and sister who are about 10 years older than me. Oh. So it created an interesting dynamic, because I was always that annoying little sister that always wanted to get involved and always wanted to know what they were doing and play with their friends. And for me, I went to boarding school when I was 11 or 12. And I remember I had a tiny little like Nokia brick, and I used it to just sort of text my mum and be like, I had a bad day at school today. And I didn't actually get a kind of smartphone until much later on. I must have been maybe 14 or 15. And that was the time when Instagram was like just the kind of cool thing. And if you didn't have Instagram, you were a nobody. And it was all that. And it was, every picture was over filtered and edited and very funny. But there was no such thing as like influencers or any of that kind of stuff. So it's really been in the last like year or so that I feel that my Instagram platform has been something that I've actively kind of worked on and tried to use it as a networking, but also to kind of help people, if that's the way to put it. Before then, it was just like stupid pictures of me on a beach or me doing everyday things. But I don't use Twitter. I use Facebook, but only to kind of keep up with my mum's friends, really. I don't feel that it's something that I use with my generation. And again, like things like Snapchat, I laugh and always say like, I have no idea how to use these things. And to a certain extent, that is definitely true. I have not gone into TikTok. I can't do it.
That's so good. That sounds like you have a very healthy relationship with social media. And it's actually really interesting, because this just came into mind. Like, I was speaking to someone a couple of days ago who said the same thing about how like they have literally no social media except like a Facebook account for like joining university societies. And I was like, oh my goodness, like that is so hard to imagine. And like the other thing I think as well, which is just coming to my mind again, is like, as you say, like when we were younger, I remember everyone used to say, oh, like, you know, you've got to have Instagram, you've got to have Snapchat, whatever. And it was weird if you didn't have social media. And now it's sort of a thing that's like growing, where if you don't have social media, like it's really cool and really respected. You know, like it's like, wow, you're so strong. You're not a sheep. Like
mysterious.
It's like, yeah, exactly that. Like you can't, I can't find out everything about you within like two clicks. Like how annoying. So what do you post on your Instagram at the moment? Like, what do you use it for if it's not so much a platform for you to sort of, you know, as you say, like post silly photos or just like random things? Like most people do use it.
Well, I like to use it as a kind of portfolio of things that have been going on in my life. And as I say, it's only really been in the last year and a bit that my life's actually got interesting. So long I was at boarding school, and I mean, you just you do the same thing every day, you knuckle down, you get your grades. Not much was going on. So in the last year or so, when I've been able to kind of do what I want to do and have some range in my daily activities, I guess my aim is to just show a normal human being. And it sounds so silly, but so many of these accounts are not real. And they're, you know, they are the best bits. And I understand to a certain extent that a portfolio, you know, it is your best bits. It's your kind of highlights and stuff. But for me, that wasn't something I wanted to do. And I enjoy so many aspects of my life that aren't necessarily picture perfect. And so, there's a whole range of things. I like to go into body positivity a lot. And that's something I'm definitely kind of exploring ways to do that right now in the healthiest way possible. But there's a range. I like to write a lot, and I take stuff that I've seen from other people or little poems or quotes and kind of expand on my ideas and what I think about it. But in terms of the pictures, it's just a lot of like me doing very mundane things, but just being like, this is what these influencers do behind the scenes as well. They just because they don't post a picture doesn't mean they're not hoovering on a Monday morning as well.
That's so healthy and, yeah, really nice way to approach social media. So with body positivity and, you know, talking about that and how it's important to you, is it something that you've always been very, like, proud of? Because you seem like you're a very confident person. So have you always cared about what people thought or, like, not really? Like, was it the opposite? Or is this just sort of like a journey that you've been on within yourself?
I think it's definitely been a journey. I think everyone has their journey with body positivity. I mean, some people might not have reached the end. Some people might be midway through. But I think it's such a nice word to accept and show the fact that it's not always just one straight hill up, and we always dip. And I mean, I have bad days as well, and you know, hate this or see a picture of someone else and think, oh God, that's annoying. But I think my biggest thing, really, if I'm honest, is the transition from leaving school. And I think when I was at school, particularly because it was a boarding school, you don't have choice in what you eat. You are taught, you know, you have your menu and you do that. And I was also doing sport. I mean, 5 days a week, I was doing all these clubs and teams and keeping myself active. And when I left school, and it was actually down to me to make sure, you know, I was keeping up with those things. And then also to have the pandemic and to cut sports teams and your ability to keep up with that, it's been really interesting seeing when I've let myself kind of be where my body has come to and where it is naturally. And again, so I think in the last year or so, I've started to kind of share that journey with other people. But I've been very lucky, very fortunate in the fact that I've never suffered with an eating disorder. I've never really felt the impact of social media on my body image. And I've always been pretty comfortable in my own skin and where I'm at. But I've also, again, never been shamed or had opportunities taken away because of that. So it's been certainly a personal journey, but I think it's also important to acknowledge my privilege within it, and that I'm a white, able-bodied woman who can exercise and can have choice in what they eat and have flexibility throughout the week.
That's really warming and like nice to know, and it's so rare that I speak to someone as well who says that they haven't felt the impact of social media and like sort of, I guess, the typical beauty standards, which, I mean, I say typical because it's ever changing. But, you know,
tell me about it.
I've never spoken to someone who's felt like that. So that's really like nice to know. And also really interesting as well that your sort of body positivity journey, especially on social media, has been one of like, I guess, joy and acceptance, and that's like interesting because over the past year with COVID Like, I've seen so much stuff about, like, oh, get rid of the quarantine 15. And
I
then
know.
there was, like, a backlash to it, and people were like, no, like, you know, we just need to focus on being healthy. And then it was like, no, like, buy all this gym equipment for your at-home gyms. I was just like, oh, my goodness, like, it's unbelievable. Like, it's incessant. So it's nice to hear that, you know, someone's actually come out really strongly through it. And, you know, as you say, it hasn't affected you to the extent that I'm sure, as we've seen, you know, the government have released statistics and mental health charities released statistics about people suffering with eating disorders and how it skyrocketed in lockdown. So that's a really, like, hopeful story to hear.
Well, I listened to your podcast, one of them about the diet industry and all the things that you hate about it, and I thought it was fantastic. But I saw a quote or an Instagram something, and they said, you know, I told myself that 10 p.m. on a Monday when I was crying, you know, to fix up or whatever, when I was going through a global pandemic. It's like, you know, we're told to keep fit and do this and da 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 and keep up and, as you say, buy this gym equipment, but no, accept the fact that you're at home and stay indoors but also exercise. And it's like blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, can we just accept the fact that we're all going through a global pandemic? There is so much more going on in the world than what my body looks like. And I think it's so important to just sometimes step back and be like, oh, okay, here's the bigger picture. How much does this actually mean today and right now and to the world?
Yeah, completely. I agree with you. And I think something really shocking for me, I mean, I think this is more of a personal experience, but like, I mean, I don't know if you have experienced this, but the like targeting of women's bodies over this pandemic has been unbelievable. And I haven't even noticed it on like a sort of social media national level so much. But like, I remember when we were finally able in the summer in the UK, like to, you know, go outside and stuff and everyone could spend time with each other. The amount of times I heard people where I live saying like, oh, have you seen so-and-so recently? Oh, she's put on so much weight. Oh my goodness. Like, you know, she's put on a ton. And I just was like, okay, wait, whoa. Like, what has just happened? Like we, firstly, whether someone has or hasn't put on weight is absolutely no one's business. You know, it, like, it doesn't matter at all. Secondly, a lot of the people that were being spoken about were teenage girls. So it's like, well, they're at a pivotal time in their life when girls do generally like fill out, like that is nature. And also, like, the exact same people, and I saw this on social media too, it's like the same people who will be saying this stuff are then also posting on social media like, oh, be kind, all this and that. And it's like, it's not social. I just think it's not social commentary to say, oh, haven't they gained a lot of weight over the pandemic? Like, did I miss something? Like, where did we go wrong? Like, who thought it was a good idea to start saying this? But yeah, I don't know what it is, but I think that's something I've really noticed, like people talking about weight and like, as you say, you know, whether it is in a social context or not, it doesn't matter, it's irrelevant. But people removing it and basically saying, oh, that person like isn't as great as they were before the pandemic, or that person, you know, has clearly struggled over the pandemic because of their weight. You know what, that person might have had an absolutely great time, have embraced themselves and truly found like love for themselves and their body over the pandemic. And here you are, still judging, you know.
I've been very lucky in that I've moved country. So anyone that sees me this side of the global pandemic didn't know what I looked like before. So actually no one will know whether I put on weight or not.
There you go. That's the key. That's how you escape misogyny and patriarchy, everyone. Just move.
Just move. Every couple of years, just move. Remodel yourself. But no, I think again, I've been lucky because the start of this, I was at school with a whole bunch of classmates who it sounds harsh, but realistically 90% of them I'll never see them again. And so for me, and this whole kind of almost rebranding of myself, which I think sounds very dramatic, but I think it's true, has come at such a helpful time, but also a time where I didn't really have anything to lose. It was like, let's just go with this and roll with it, because all the people that are in my life now that don't want to follow me through this don't have to. They can leave and they will never see me again, and we can all be mutually happy with that. But I think the commenting and the like, oh, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Da, 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 da. It's hard because social media is our only platform for connecting with people. And as much as we've spent so long while social media has been building, talking about ways that we can still have human interaction and still keep that kind of, even within dating relationships, like that love at first sight meetings, which doesn't happen very often anymore because so much of it happens online. And yet we've come to this situation where actually we have no choice but to use online and social media. And it's such a hard one to balance. And I've certainly found that too. I mean, there's only so much FaceTiming friends I can take before I just want to throw my phone at a wall. And it's that I want to connect with people, and especially since moving away, there's so many people that I want to still connect with, but I do have to limit my time on social media because there is so much negativity on there still, and it's such a shame that that is still happening, but it is. And even though the people I choose to follow aren't necessarily posting it, the advertisements, the targeted ads, the targeted sponsorships, oh, it just makes me feel sick and again throw my phone out the wall.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think that's really important that you recognize how you needed to take that break, because I know that that wasn't the case for me. During the first lockdown, number one, I was so like, oh wow, I feel so great, this is so weird, like we're in a pandemic and I feel so great.
Yeah.
And then slowly, like, the weeks went by and more time I was spending on my phone, and it just felt so bad, and I was like, this is unsustainable. And I think that, like, oh, it's great if you can be aware of that, but I think for a lot of people it gets too far, you know, and then your mood is low, and even if you are speaking to friends, it feels like you're just doing it because you're going through the motions. So I think, yeah, it's definitely, this past year has taught me, and I think a lot of people I know personally and just see online, like, to take breaks and to, like, know your limits, and also know that you're not actually missing out on much, because even if you go, like, you could come off social media for, like, 3 weeks, or even like 2 months, let's say, during a lockdown, and like, what have you actually missed? Like, you haven't really missed anything. Like, no one's going anywhere, no one's doing anything, like, there's no FOMO. But it is interesting, like, I've, you know, the Prime Minister in the UK announced it last night about
lockdown, of course,
restrictions, like, all coming off, and I was speaking to friends, and one of my friends was like, I've literally got FOMO, and like, it hasn't even started yet. She's like, the clubs are going to open on 21st of June, and I've already got FOMO. And to be honest, I don't know about what you think, but I'm somewhat scared about that whole culture coming back. Like, you know, the best photos from a night out that probably wasn't that great, or like the filtering holiday photos, so you just see like that one perfect photo as opposed to all the times that you know, just like sitting there enjoying yourself. So I don't know. For me, like, I think one of the most nerve-wracking things about lockdown coming to an end is probably like, are we going to change our attitude to social media again? Is it going to go back to like this filtered world as opposed to like what I love, which is like the photo dumps where people just post random things about what they've been doing? Yeah, what do you think about it?
I also find it interesting because I live in this happy bubble on Instagram, because the mute button is my best friend and the block button is also a fantastic feature. And I have sort of just carved out all the crap around the edges and have this happy little bubble where everyone I follow is really, you know, it shows their authentic self and puts their wobbly bits on Instagram and is fantastic. And the people that follow me as well, I feel that if they choose to see my wobbly bits, then they're probably pretty happy with, you know, seeing that and having that too. So my community on Instagram is essentially a highlight. It's all the best bits of Instagram. And so I often found myself having these kind of debates or conversations with friends being like, Instagram has come so far and isn't it fantastic? And they're like, no, I mean, my Instagram's still full of Kendall Jenner photoshopping her body to look like a hairpin or whatever. And I do sometimes have to step back and kind of almost like venture into that negative side to remind myself that actually this is still going on. And I mentioned before, I don't use TikTok. I have no idea how to use it. But anything I've seen of it has been really negative, and especially the things around eating disorders and all these challenges about tying stuff around your waist and things. For me, I don't even want to be a part of it. But it's such a shame that that fairly new platform, and a platform that I would say has grown through the pandemic, is still, you know, it's still featuring that kind of content on their site. And I think you're right, that scares me for what's to come.
Yeah, for sure. That's actually a really good point about TikTok as well, because it was, I remember there was like, I am on TikTok, I'm ashamed to say.
But I think if you use it in the right way, it's also a fantastic.
Yes,
there is good stuff in there too.
Yeah, absolutely. During the first lockdown, I remember there was like really great content, you know, everyone doing fun stuff and all like the sort of fun challenges, and it was just making life a little bit brighter because you were able to connect with people. But yeah, I have seen the dark side of TikTok, and like it's so like obvious and clear to me like how the videos I'm seeing are then like correlating with my mental health. Like I notice, you know, suddenly I get, as you say, like these really triggering videos of like people eating less than a certain amount of calories a day, which is just like unbelievably stressful to see. And then you see like the healthy version of this, the healthy version of that. And at first, like, I won't even deny it, I allowed myself to slip back into it because I was like, oh, right, yeah, it felt comfortable, because I remember there was a time on Tumblr, which is another very dangerous platform, where like that was what I used to see. Like all of the stuff that I saw was like that. And it put me in a very dark place then. But it was also like seeing it on TikTok was like, wow, like I remember this, I know this. And when I wasn't feeling good because of excessive social media use, I was like, oh, yeah, this is what I need. Like, tell me what I need to do to make myself feel better. And then I realized, I was like, no, these are the same, you know, probably very troubled young teenagers posting it on TikTok as they were on Tumblr. And I'm 19 and I shouldn't be listening to what a 14-year-old is saying about how I should look. And I realized, like, all right, I was like, that's just not interested. Every video I was like clicking, not interested. And then again, you know, it's fine, everything's fine. And then slowly it comes to creep back in. And it's so worrying because I feel like the sort of, I don't know, I mean, I don't know if you were on Tumblr, but like the sort of struggles that we all had on Tumblr back in the day are now being recreated on TikTok. And, you know, if it can suck someone in who's like, you know, relatively mature, relatively like stable, like knows themselves quite well, I really, really worry for all those young people who have been affected. And I wonder, in those statistics that have been released by the government, how many of those people are also watching TikTok videos, which is then like triggering disordered eating and like body dysmorphia.
My sister is, 13, I think. And she is, I mean, she's been off school. She's year 9, I want to say. So literally like TikTok's prime audience, which is, again, an awful thing to say because social media should not really be aimed at that age group anyway, but that has seemed to happen. And she hasn't had school, she hasn't been able to see her friends, all her clubs or activities that she wants to do have all been cancelled, and so she has been spending a lot of time on social media, and she is part of the TikTok world. And I've had many conversations with her about just kind of checking in and talking to her about how she feels about things, or who she's seen on TikTok a lot and what kind of things she's posting. Because I don't have her on it, it's hard for me to kind of monitor what's going on. But she, it's the same. She is quite a stable 13-year-old. She knows what she's doing. She can be pretty trusted on these kind of things. But she said TikTok has just been a really difficult place to be in, and I think for her age to be navigating that, it's exactly what you're saying. Tumblr was that for us, really. It was like full of all these quotes and pictures that just should never have been published to anyone, let alone someone at such an impressionable age. And it's like, just as you think we're kind of moving on and letting these poor girls deal with their own struggles without adding more to them, it's like, nope, here we go, let's just remind you that actually this is still happening. It's awful.
Yeah, absolutely it is. I sort of wonder though, like who do we hold like accountable for it? Who's responsible? Because, you know, you get to a point, well, I would hope, and from people I know, you get to a point where even if you are still struggling with like body dysmorphia or disordered eating, you know that you don't want to share it. Like it's so personal, and so I guess for a lot of people, like there's so much shame around it that it's not something to brag about, and it's not something that you ever want someone else to go through. But equally, like we can't be saying to 13 and 14 year old children on the internet, oh, like, you know, shame on you for sharing this and that, because they don't know. And at that age, it is about competition. It is about, oh, who can look the best. And you're so unsure of who you are that, you know, that sort of content you can find safety in. I mean, what do you think? Like, who do you think should be doing something? Is it parents, governments? I mean, I don't really know, like CEOs of TikTok.
It's such a tricky one. And it's something I've actually really been working on with my app, is making it accessible for all, but at the same time having some kind of limit to it, really, because I remember reading all this stuff, and I'm going to get it really wrong, so I'm going to slightly tread carefully, but I don't know whether it's already been put to law yet or not, but they were talking about all these anonymous trolling accounts and how accounts shouldn't be anonymous. I don't know whether it's officially been a law yet or not, but if it isn't, it should be. And I know there's lots of activists working towards it. And so I think the first step really is to have a much clearer verification process when you sign up to these apps that you are above the age. I also think making these, again, I'm not actually too sure what the age limits is on these apps. There's so many young people on there who some are evidently too young, some you think maybe have just passed it, but to actually, for me, I would up it to 16, 18 even for most of these apps, and keep that as like quite a strict protocol. But you're right, it's really hard. And the thing is, with these apps and these social medias would be nothing without the influencers on them. And the difficult thing is, we as a collective of users on TikTok have made so-and-so an influencer of TikTok and so-and-so an influencer of Instagram, because we have chosen to engage with their content and sort of up their success and their numbers. That's really hard, because if when you go through that, you then go back into how we've been brainwashed into thinking that X is beautiful, or X is, you know, this is how you should aspire to live your life, and so and so, and it, and then you kind of go back and it's like, okay, it's not our fault, it's the people that brainwashed us. And that is like a whole rabbit hole of stuff you don't want to get into.
I completely agree. And I do think as well, as you say, ID law is like the 100% the best way to go. I was thinking, like, you know, there are so many things that I do understand, like as a young person, I definitely think that I know better about, and then I'm like, oh no, I actually should listen to someone older and wiser because they have experience in this. But really, when it comes to social media, our generation, I guess, like, you know, probably 2001 to, I guess, now, but equally, I mean, there's a limit, but yeah, I guess 2000s onwards, we have grown up with social media, and like we are the only ones who truly know the harm that it's done. You know, yeah. I remember I was thinking about like all the terrible stuff that I used to see on the internet. Like, I don't even want to go into it, because it was just horrible. And I saw some like reminders of stuff, and I was like, wow, like it actually was very dark growing up. And yeah, I think that people should be listening to us. And even, you know, we're a very liberal generation. We're a very, generally speaking, I'd say, accepting. And, you know, we want to push the boundaries. We want to test society and change it for the better. But I think that most of us would agree that this is something we should be strict on. And whether people would say, like, 18 should be a limit, 16 should be a limit, although there should be 100%, like, some sort of ID verification, I think that, like, the people in power really should listen to us and hear us out, because, you know, it's done lasting damage to a lot of people. And even if it hasn't done to you, like, I would say that those people are definitely the minority. Like, to have not witnessed anything scary online makes you the minority in our generation.
But also to have witnessed it and have already got to a place in their life where they are comfortable, confident, whatever you want to call it, to not be affected by it. And I think I am in a minority of that, because I did that kind of, I got to a place where it wasn't going to affect me much earlier than other people of my age, which isn't something to brag about. It isn't necessarily something that I have really, you know, here is your magic potion, or I paid this amount to get it, or whatever. It's just been something that I think I've constantly been aware of. And also having kind of, I guess it wasn't social media back when I was younger and doing voiceovers, but I was certainly exposed to a level of, it was exposure really at such a young age. And I think for me, my mum was really good at always like grounding me and reminding me of where I was and what was going on. But she was also really good at protecting me and not showing me this article or this or whatever was going on. But I don't feel that holding parents accountable for their children online is also the right thing, because as you say, we're the generation affected. We're the generation that have gone through it. God, my mum doesn't know how to use an Instagram account. And so for her to then be in a position where she's monitoring what I'm doing or my sister's doing is just ludicrous.
Yeah, completely. I definitely think that, you know, parents try their best, but like, I think a lot of the information that they were sold about the dangers of the internet was definitely like, oh, there could be predators. And while that is a huge problem, it was drilled into them that that was what they needed to be focusing on. And I remember so many times sitting down and having these conversations, like, I'm not speaking to anyone online. I'm not doing that. But equally, I wasn't doing that. I wasn't speaking to any strangers online. Instead, I was seeing horrific, traumatizing images and posts and videos that, like, I should not have been seeing. And it's just, yeah, I think it's so interesting that, you know, at the time, like when you're a child, like you don't have the tools to communicate that. Like I was never going to say, oh, actually, it's nothing like that. I've just seen something really scary and I don't know what to do about it and I don't know who to talk to. But yeah, we didn't have that opportunity. And, you know, I guess parents can't know everything, so it isn't their responsibility. But I don't know, I wouldn't say I'm scared, but I fear in a way, like what will be next. I wondered, like with the internet and with like tech and media growing, will it come to a point where when, you know, our generation have children where we're not, you know, we're not queued up on what's going on for them? Like, is it going to be the same thing where there are these new things that we don't know about and we're, you know, reminding them, oh, like if you see any like worrying images, if you don't, you know, social pressures, all this, if we, you know, try and preach about what we think is a danger, is it going to have the same effect? And will they also be like viewing things that they shouldn't be seeing?
I think at the rate that technology is growing and transforming and new things are popping up all the time, I think it's inevitable that I will one day become my mother and I will not know what's going on. And I think it's important to be able to recognize that, which unfortunately I do feel that a lot of adults who are in the industry of social media and certainly, I mean, it's that generation that have created these apps are then almost in such denial about what's going on. And it's a really interesting concept for them to sort of even be able to have a say in that, because they are not the ones being affected, and therefore for them to go no, it's all positive, you're like, do you have an account on the app? You know, are you using it like a 13-year-old would? Because I'm sure that's not happening. But it's interesting because you mentioned the whole Tinder sort of TikTok, not Tinder, sorry, Tumblr, TikTok. And it's funny because it's always the same issues running through whatever content that creates. It's, you know, there's a lot about eating disorders and how a woman's body should look. And I do feel that those are the kind of main issues that come up, and it's interesting to see the content that comes out with, whether that is a horrific picture and slogans that shouldn't be put anywhere, or it's it's much smaller touches. And it was interesting. I put a poll up on my Instagram recently about the Instagram versus reality trend, and how we put, people would put a picture of them on a beach looking fantastic with a filter, and then they would put the picture of them lying on a beach, belly out, no filter. And whether people thought that this was a healthy thing, and whether they thought this was positive because it was showing you the Instagram picture and then it was showing you what's really happening, or whether it was a negative thing because actually that was encouraging the idea that Instagram was only for polished pictures. And I got very mixed reviews. It was really interesting. It was almost like a 50-50 split between people thinking both things. And I've read articles recently about the what I eat in a day videos, and how like 80% of them are a pile of nonsense. But it was really interesting because I'm sure to a certain extent they came out as a harmless trend. People were just talking about what they ate in the day, but it, all of these things where you're talking about eating, calories, you, what you look like, your self-image, there will always be a way for them to trickle into an unhealthy, for someone to take it in an unhealthy fashion. And I'd be interested to think what you think about the Instagram versus reality thing, actually.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point. And I have seen a lot of those going around, like Instagram versus reality. To be honest, they sort of pass me by in a way, because a lot of the time, the people who are posting them are people who I'm like, oh, I can rely on you for, you know, like valuable content, I guess, like, you know, something that isn't going to be triggering, isn't going to be upsetting, is something that I want to see. So like, I, you know, a lot of it, sometimes it's funny things, like, I mean, I can't say this has happened, but like, let's say, for example, like the Kardashians, let's say the Kardashians were to do it, it would more be like they're all posing for a family photo with their children, and then the next is a funny one. It wouldn't be like a photo of, oh, here I am looking really toned and hot and sexy, and here I am, you know, I'm actually just sitting in bed eating a pizza and I'm just chilling, you know, like, it wouldn't be that. So it does sort of go past me, because although I love to see it, generally I'm like, you know, I, you know, pat on the back for people who do it, but I'm like, oh, I already know that you're going to give me that content. So that's one thing. And also, yeah, in terms of what you said about like what I eat in a day and stuff like that, really interestingly, so I have an account on Instagram, which is like for like sort of fitness, mental health, general like positivity, and like for food ideas. Like, I'm always coming up with, like, I love to bake, so I come up with like baking ideas and I put it on there. And I put on a poll and I was like, oh, would you guys like to see what I eat in a day? And the whole thing about my account as well is it's like no talking about calories, no talking about weight, even like the weights I'm lifting, nothing like that. I hate all that content, and I wanted to like have a space where I could, you know, put up fun little workouts that you could do if you want to move your body without doing like, and here's a progress photo, look how good I look, like there's none of that. But yeah, I put up this poll because a couple of people would ask me like, oh, how much do you eat in a day? And I would never say my calories or anything, but more people wanted to see what I was eating in a day than like the actual meals, like an actual recipe. So like, I had a plan, like, oh, I've got this really nice like cookie recipe, and people wanted to see what I eat in a day over that. And I was like, I don't want to not do it, but equally like, there's something in that. And I was like, that is so strange, like, why do people care what I'm eating? And so I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And obviously, you know, there's like chocolate in there, there's like a really healthy balanced diet of like, oh, I've got vegetables, and then I've got a lot of cheese, and yeah, I eat meat, so you can see there's all that. And there was, it was completely unrestricted. But I did think, like, while I was doing it, I was like, this is like a very sort of like gray area for me. Like, personally, while I got loads of positive messages saying, oh, it's so nice to see someone, you know, an unrestricted diet, someone eating how they actually want to eat as opposed to like how they think they need to eat, at the same time I was like, this is weird, because I saw people doing a version of this which was very upsetting to me, and now people are asking me to do it. And and obviously I would do it how it feels comfortable for me, but I was like, it sort of gets to a place where I was like, I feel like I just need to take a break for a bit, because I don't want to get to the point where I'm like, oh, now everyone's pressuring me to do it and they're expecting something of me, so let's just cut out all the like snacks I had and just show them like, you know, my three rigid meals a day or something like that. So I think it is a really sort of like tricky like area, especially when you're young and like navigating social media and when you're trying to create positive content, because that's what I'm trying to do. But then like it's people still want, I think in their minds they're like, oh, like show us what you're really doing, and it does get a bit unhealthy. But I don't know, it's just something I guess you have to make decisions for yourself, and yeah, whatever you feel comfortable doing, you do. But I do think that there's like a lot of scary stuff to do with, especially like what I eat in a day, and it's like glass of water, done.
But I think it's interesting, you've touched on that as well, the whole like audience content response balance. I think especially when you get to a point where you are, where it's not, where your Instagram isn't just a selection of pictures that you put up in a day, and you are trying to have some kind of hopefully positive impact on your audience, it does become that. I have struggled with the balance between what I want to put out there, but also not being a slave to my audience, but also accepting that they are here for a reason too. And if they want to see something from me, then that would also be creating positive change. So to have that balance it's difficult. And for me, I've always, all my content has just been stuff that I'm doing right now. And I'm not good at planning content, so most stuff I post, unless it's pictures, which I will save until the right moments to kind of put in a nice picture of myself every now and again, but I like to blend it in with a picture of me naked in the snow trying to be Kim Kardashian.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I went through a phase of recreating Kim Kardashian's Skims collection.
No
videos
way.
Oh yeah, there is a mighty picture of me in my underwear in the snow on my balcony recreating Kim Kardashian.
Oh my goodness, that is something I have to see. I'm going to have to find that photo. That is brilliant. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I love that.
But I think it's getting a balance, because that was something that I wanted to do, so I did it. But there has certainly been other things, and especially when I opened my blog and I started writing more, there was a lot of stuff that people wanted me to write about. And I got a lot of messages from people that ran their own blogs or magazines, and they wanted me to write a little article, nothing big, but they wanted some kind of input from me. And I, at the time, and especially at the beginning, I was so honored to be asked for this stuff. And I wanted to grow my community. So I wanted the exposure, I guess, and I wanted to kind of spread the name and my brand. But at the same time, there were so many where I just had to decline in the end, because I was like, it's just not what I want to do. It's not me. I don't want to write that. And that did take a lot, because I was turning down opportunities, but I didn't want to do it, and therefore I didn't. And it's hard to maybe feel like you were disappointing people, or you weren't writing about things that people would want to listen to. But I think at the end of the day, it's mine, and it's my I'm in control of what I post. But no, I can see your frustration. It's a tricky one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's quite interesting. I feel like something we have in common, maybe. I mean, my sort of like, I guess like, yeah, my sort of fitness stuff is more just like a personal thing, and then a lot of like my friends follow it, so it's not anything, you know, like where, yeah, I'm actively like, oh yeah, I want to, you know, make content for people. But no, I think that's true. I think that between us, it's sort of like both of us share like a defiance in the no, you know, like, yeah, I want to do things that make other people happy, and I want to do things that, you know, people are going to enjoy. But equally, there has to be a line. And so the same way that you're like, no, I am actually not going to write that, because that's not going to improve my life in any way, and also I don't really want to represent myself that way, I will not eat chocolate every single day, and I will not post it on my Instagram, and I just don't care. Like, I honestly just don't care. That's just how it's gonna be.
And that's such a healthy mindset as well. And I think also, I mean, again, I'm nowhere at a stage where my influence is any bigger than a group of friends and maybe some mutual friends within it, so I'm sat here talking as if I'm, you know, chief influencer, which is not true. But I think at any stage when you have an audience of people and you have people that follow you that don't know you personally, I think at that point you do have to accept that you have some kind of influence on their lives. And me following anyone, whatever they post, I would love to say, oh, it has no influence on me at all, but it will do at some point, whether that is sparking an emotion or a feeling or whatever it may cause. But I think, yeah, I think you have to get the balance also between what you want to show and being real and authentic, and also sometimes being private, not wanting to share that, and actually being, you know, sometimes I have down days and I will share with people that I'm not feeling great today, and I maybe I'd say for what reason if I know the reason, but sometimes I'm like, no, I don't want to, and I don't owe anyone anything, and therefore that's something I'm just going to keep to myself today.
Yeah,
I'm going to be in a grump and I'm going to enjoy it.
No, that's a really, really good thing, because I think especially like with social media, again, like the new social media, which I see a lot, is like this like woke social media where it's like you can be positive, and this is something I question a lot. It's like toxic positivity. It's like, am I being, oh, if I don't tell everyone that I'm having a down day, like, am I being toxic? Am I saying that you should only feel happy? And sometimes you just do need to take a step back and be like, you know, I don't owe anyone anything. And as you say, like, you know, it's even if you had never said, oh, I'm feeling sad and this is the reason, if you don't ever want to share that, that is completely up to you. And like, that doesn't, even as much as like, yeah, like I said, this sort of like new style of social media tries to tell you, oh yeah, like that's bad, like you're not being authentic, you're not being real, it's unsustainable. And I think that like there have been so many sad stories of people who are now in their 30s of when they were like on platforms like YouTube or like Tumblr speaking about how doing that actually didn't help them at all, how being honest didn't help them at all. That it's, you get to decide that. And even if you do have a platform where people expect something of you, which I guess is what, you know, is the case for you, it, you can still draw the line. And like, that's good. That's good to have that sense of self. And like, I guess, yeah, you're very assertive in that, which I really appreciate. And I think that other people who follow you do as well.
Well, I think you're right. The very few kind of, I guess they weren't influencers. Like the people that I enjoyed watching or that had an Instagram account back in the day, a couple of years ago, were YouTubers. They weren't Instagrammers. They had a YouTube platform and they created videos on there. And their Instagram was just a kind of way to publish it, a network. And you're right, the amount of people that have come out recently, either saying that they're moving away from social media, which has been interesting. A lot of people and a lot of activists that I follow have moved to a more of like a newsletter format, which is interesting. And then also have said, you know, actually I'm taking a step back from sharing this part of my life, and or I'm not going to put my relationship online anymore because I've made mistakes and I've regretted it. And I think for me, I just don't want to ever get to a position where I feel like a robot or a slave to my audience, because at the end of the day, that also isn't authentic and that also isn't me being me. And my whole kind of selling point is that it's me.
Yeah.
And you get what you get, and there's no changing that. And I think the second that I do start doing things because I feel I have to, is the second actually my brand and my name just disappears. There's no selling point anymore.
Completely. Yeah, I understand that, and I think that that's great that you have that approach, because it is so easy, especially when you're young with any form of platform, to just be like, this is what's expected of me, this is what everyone else is doing, this is what works. So yeah, I think that's great. Is there anything else that you want to add before we finish up? Any like tips for maintaining mental well-being, or literally anything? That just came to mind, but yeah, anything that you want to talk about?
I think my one thing is just to contextualize everything, and we're in a global pandemic, and just be kind to yourself. And I think so many people, especially now with the pandemic and lots of people being on furlough or not reaching the full education that they were getting before, there's this kind of hustle culture of like What are you doing? What are you learning? Are you learning a language? Are you baking banana bread? Are you doing something? What are you doing with your time? And I think just removing that guilt from not doing something or feeling worse than you usually do right now is so important. And just recognizing that actually this time we're in right now is not normal and it will go down in history. And you are allowed to feel sad and you're allowed to feel scared and you're allowed to, you know, have every emotion heightened right now because you are living in a little bubble. And I think that would be my one thing, just take a breath and be kind to yourself.
Oh, that's lovely, that's so helpful. So I mentioned that I'd like to ask if you wanted to give your Instagram handle so that people can go and follow you and check you out. Are you okay doing that?
Yeah, of course. It's at sugarbumfairy. And that is my Instagram, which I post lots of pictures and comments and little anecdotes. And then there's also a link to my blog, which is in there, which is just my Instagram, but a bit more formal.
Lovely. And can I ask you for a book recommendation as well?
Good one. I am going to give you two books. And the first one is Women Don't Know You Pretty by Florence Given. But I'm also going to recommend How to Get Over a Boy by Chidera Agarwu, The Slum Flower, because those are two fantastic books and they've had a lot of controversy in the media. And I think it's such a shame that two women who are in similar industries are being bashed and turned against each other. And I think we can celebrate both of these books. So absolutely. I've read both of them and loved them, and I think we should read both of them, but we should love them equally as well.
Great, yeah, that's brilliant, and I've been following all of that, so that's nice.
Yeah, me too.
That is a side of social media that is toxic, but yeah, those are brilliant recommendations, and I'm sure that everyone listening will appreciate it. And I just want to say thank you so much for being here today and speaking. You've been absolutely brilliant, and you're just so, so lovely, and your view of the world is amazing, so... let's all have a little bit more Leah in our lives.
Lord, please don't do that. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really hope you enjoyed yourself. And if you have any questions or queries about what came up, then feel free to message me. Or, of course, reach out to Leah on her social media to contact her. Thank you so much for listening. And hopefully I'll see you next time on Afternoon Tea.